Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. I appreciate you tuning in. Today on the show, we have Scott from BitAx and Econo Alchemist of the 256 Foundation. We go all into solo mining. So we talk about what solo mining is, how we're defining that, the projects that they're working on, and the exciting story from the 256 Foundation that they, as part of their fundraiser, were able to find a block during this 10-hour event. So very cool stuff. I think this is one of these important topics that often goes underappreciated and missed by many Bitcoiners. I encourage you to stay around, listen to the end, hear what these guys have to say. It's very, very important. I think you'll enjoy this one. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got Econo and Scott here with me. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
It's exciting times for the both of you. So I imagine this is going to be an interesting conversation. And as I told you offline, I am very new to this. If there's one thing about Bitcoin I understand the least, it's probably mining. But it's something I'm getting more excited about. And I think there are probably no two people better to explain what you're working on, why it's so important than you all. So Econo, why don't you kick it off? People will still one of the most interesting conversations I've had on the podcast was with you and Diverter on Free Samurai. And so some people are going to be familiar with you, but maybe just tell everyone a little bit about who you are, how long you've been in Bitcoin, and then we'll get to, and Scott, you take over after that, but we'll get to the 256 Foundation and BitAx here in just a moment too.
Sure. Yeah. That episode was a lot of fun with Diverter. Hopefully my audio is okay this time and we don't have to do the AI interpretation. But just real quick shout out to Samurai Wallet too. If anyone's not familiar with that case, go visit freesamurai.com to get familiar with it. And if you can donate, go to P2P Rights found p2prights.org. God, I can't even remember the URL. Anyways, I got into Bitcoin about 2018. And, I just kind of thought of it like a stock. And a few Andreas Antonopoulos videos later, I really realized or began to grasp what this technology could actually do. And it was a big deal to me because, I had always struggled, with finances, having my paychecks garnished, for example, or having banks tell me that I couldn't open a bank account, or just having banks, just control what I could do with my money. And so I really started digging into like what Bitcoin actually was and the capabilities that it had. And that's when I kind of fell down the censorship resistant, self-custody and privacy rabbit holes. And I just started putting out content about everything I was learning along my journey. And a lot of people started, finding value in that, I think. And, before I knew it, I was publishing articles with Bitcoin Magazine, getting invited to give talks at conferences. I worked for Upstream Data for about a year and did their monthly newsletters and published some articles with the Brains Mining blog. So I put a lot of written content out there, a lot of like technical guides. That's kind of my niche. And about a year ago, we started the 256 Foundation. Our mission is to dismantle the proprietary mining empire to make Bitcoin and freedom tech accessible to anyone. And really what we're trying to do is just take this like proprietary closed Bitcoin mining ecosystem and break it wide open for everybody to be able to innovate the way that we know that they can. Just recently we held our first fundraiser and it was a smashing success. We hit block height 881,423 and we're able to raise 3.146 Bitcoin to help fund the five projects that we've got planned for 2025.
I love it, man. Scott, why don't you talk a little bit about you? We're going to get more into that, what that moment was like and what exactly that means for everyone.
Yeah, I'm Scott.
I feel like I heard about Bitcoin really early on, dismissed it as, I don't know, why do I even need this? I already have PayPal. And then PayPal rugged me. They closed my account and took my balance and would not tell me why they had done that. It was kind of funny because this was back when you had to have PayPal essentially to use eBay. Like they were just like totally linked and you couldn't really do one without the other. And I remember talking to some friends and be like, PayPal, you know, closed my account. This sucks. And they're like, well, why were you doing illegal stuff? And I'm like, I wasn't like, no one would believe me that I wasn't doing anything illegal. And PayPal still just totally closed my account and took my like $20 balance hostage. I wish at the time that I had realized that Bitcoin fixes this, but I didn't. This was like maybe 2011 or so. And I kind of just didn't really get too interested in Bitcoin because I'm not really huge into like financial stuff. And it wasn't until maybe a couple years later that I learned about Bitcoin mining. This was right around the advent of ASICs and miners switching to ASIC chips from GPUs and FPGAs. And I was like, okay, this is cool. I have a background in electronics design. I'm an electrical engineer. And I really got into it and started reading more and more about it and picking up the Bitcoin fundamentals along the way. But I started not designing, but building my own FPGA-based Bitcoin miners back then. And it was really fun. You know, I was not making anything even back then, but it was really fun figuring out how it worked and combining Bitcoin with hardware, electronics hardware topics. So I got really into that. I was a part of some mining pool. I think it was called 50 BTC or maybe it was BTC Guild. I can't remember, but they got hacked. All the Bitcoin was gone and I kind of like dropped it for a little while. Fast forward to like 2019, 2020, and I was okay. Now I'm all in. I got orange pilled for a variety of reasons and went all in and decided to make my own Bitcoin miner. And I wanted to do it with ASICs now because those were the latest and greatest cool technology in Bitcoin mining. And I quickly found out that no one was doing it. No hobbyists were making Bitcoin miners. It wasn't even really possible. So I went down this rabbit hole, way down this rabbit hole of like, how do I build my own Bitcoin miner? And it involved disassembling existing miners, unsoldering things, looking at it very closely with a logic analyzer to reverse engineer everything. And that is how the BitX project started. It's just kind of digging into it for my own curiosity to figure out how mining worked. And through that process, I just started meeting people in Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining and fantastic folks like Eco, and a lot of other cool people on the group that became the Open Source Miners United, which is now a large group dedicated to supporting this kind of development work. And it just kept going. People were interested in it. Home mining struck a chord with a lot of people. And I was awarded a grant from OpenSats right around the time my fiat job was kind of fizzling out. So I just decided, let's go, and jumped in full time to working on BitX and related open source Bitcoin mining projects. And that's what I've been doing for a little over a year now. And it's been awesome, man. It's been really awesome.
That's cool. Yeah, we need more tinkerers like you. Hey, could you define a few terms just in the event these come up throughout the conversation? So FPGA? That's one I'm not familiar with. And then GPUs and ASICs, I sort of understand the basic differences, but I have a feeling we'll get to some of that.
FPGA stands for Field Programmable Gate Array. It's a super nerdy topic, but basically it's some hardware where you can reconfigure with software how the logic gates are connected within the device. So a GPU is programmable with software, kind of like a CPU is in a way. It's like a GPU is like a very parallel kind of CPU. FPGA is different in that you're actually reconfiguring how the gates are connected. So you can, for example, form a SHA-256 Bitcoin mining circuit in that chip. the way ASICs are made is actually taking that logic arrangement and committing it, sort of like hard coding it, committing it to silicon. So an FPGA is a precursor to an ASIC. The advantage of an FPGA is that it's reconfigurable. You can just keep changing it via software. The downside is it's way less efficient versus an ASIC. But an ASIC, you can't change. It is literally, you know, committed. It's set in stone once you design it.
Okay.
So there was a brief history in Bitcoin mining in between, like, mining with your desktop. So, you know, originally you could just download Bitcoin Core and run it on your home computer, and the CPU in your computer would do the mining. And so there was a brief period, as, you know, the overall network hash rate continued to increase, people were looking for better ways to mine and get more hashes per second. So there's like a brief period where they were using FPGAs in between, you know, going from using CPUs and then eventually evolving to using dedicated GPUs or graphics processing units, because those were able to handle even more than the FPGAs. And and that all happened, you know, eventually led to the advent of ASICs, which is application specific integrated circuit. And like Scott said, it's like you take that circuit and like hard code it. It's like formed in the silicone and you can't change it afterwards.
Okay. So remind me, when did you say the ASIC revolution sort of began?
It was kind of getting going with the Butterfly Labs, which eventually ended up being a scandal. But that was 2012, I think.
Okay,
somewhere in there.
So it's a pretty it's been a well used technology. I was thinking it was maybe a little bit later than that, maybe 2015 or 16. But kind of makes sense. So Scott, why don't you talk about BitAx, and then we're going to get to the 256 Foundation and maybe explain sort of the origin story, like what these devices are doing, how they work, and ultimately, like, what's the goal? Like, what does winning look like for BitAx?
Well, the BitAx is the sort of what became this mining, you know, exploration hobby project of mine. It has evolved into a fully open source design for an ASIC Bitcoin miner. So like we talked about, ASICs are the latest and greatest. Like, you basically wouldn't want to try mining on anything besides an ASIC. Just to give you an example of how much better they are, it is an ASIC has one to 10 million times higher hash rate than a CPU. So you could just start mining Bitcoin on your computer, but an ASIC can do it millions of times better. So they're quite a bit better. So anyways, BitAx, it's got an ASIC on there. We're currently using the ASIC from the Bitmain Antminers. It's probably one of the most popular mining machines out there. BitAx has got one of them in there. The designs are totally open source. The firmware that runs on it, the hardware, and it has a permissive open source license. So anyone can basically go in there and check it out, look how it, and learn how it works. They can build one for themselves. If they are a manufacturing company, they can start manufacturing them in mass, and sellers can sell them to people who just want one, starting a business around it. And several people have done that, which is pretty awesome. And that really helps get BitAxes out there, because it's also a very reasonable home miner. I think you can get them for less than $200, and they're quiet and cool. They use about as much power as like a cell phone charger. So it's not going to break the bank on your electricity bill. I've actually got 10 of them running like right over there.
And yeah,
if you're familiar with industrial Bitcoin mining machines, they're super loud and super hot. Like, you would not want to hold a conversation, much less a podcast, in the same room as one. I've got some of them behind me that are not plugged in. But BitAxes, they're super quiet. It's very reasonable to put one in your office or in your home, which is cool. I think that unlocks a a lot of potential for people to just try it and get in. You know, maybe it stops with a BitX. Maybe they jump in and go all the way down this rabbit hole and become a mega miner or start making their own miners. The BitX is, this is kind of crazy, but the BitX is the first open source ASIC Bitcoin miner. Like we talked about, we've had ASICs for over a decade, but BitX is the first open source one, which is really wild considering Bitcoin itself is fundamentally open source since the very beginning. And it's open source nature is just ingrained in Bitcoin and how it works and how it's developed. But somehow mining just was like, oh yeah, that's a proprietary activity. Companies work on that. We don't share anything over there. It's like this, we call it a pillar of Bitcoin mining. And yet it was like, oh yeah, all that stuff is designed in secret. We don't know how it works. We just trust how it works. So trying to change that, work with the 256 Foundation is in that same vein, is trying to bring Bitcoin mining sort of back into this open source fold for people to learn, develop, take advantage of the exponential growth that comes along with it. And see what we can build here.
Very cool. Yeah, we're going to get to sort of the problems with mining, and you've highlighted one. And I know that there are sort of supply chain concerns or, you know, pool centralization. Before we get to that, Ikana, why don't you talk about the 256 Foundation, what you guys are doing, any sort of interplay with BitX?
Yeah, so the first project that the foundation was able to fully fund is called Ember One. And Scott's the lead engineer on that project. And the Ember One takes and leverages everything Scott's done with the BitX to make an even more powerful miner. So the BitX is run somewhere between like 15 to 20 watts. The Ember One is going to run at like 100 watts. So where the
BitX... You guys want some visuals? I just put it together.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, let's see it. Definitely. I haven't even seen this yet.
This is the first worldwide reveal. This is the first prototype of the Ember One.
Beautiful. So
if you're familiar with
hashboards,
normal hashboards, hey, let's just do it.
Yeah. No, go on. This is cool.
So the BitX has one chip on it. The Ember One's going to have 12 chips on it.
Okay.
All right. So this is a hashboard out of a S19J Pro. Okay. It has a lot. All these black squares are the ASIC chips. It has lots of them. You can see I removed some of them up here. But there's three of these normally in a miner. This is about 1,000 watts. This is the Ember One. I just put this together last night.
Beautiful.
Like that. Yeah, it's super cool. So much smaller, way less chips. In fact, this has 12. It's targeting 100 watts. So it's a tenth of a single Antminer hashboard.
Okay.
This is going to be really cool. Like that, you know, this part would be underneath the heatsink. We got another cool factor is we got USB for data. So you could just plug this into a computer. I haven't soldered them on yet, but that's where the power connectors go right there. This is going to be pretty cool. And then for reference, this is a BitX, which has the heatsink and fan on it, but there's just one chip under there.
Okay. Very cool.
Dude, that's awesome. Scott, good job.
Thank you, man. I haven't plugged it in yet because I actually forgot one part, but
oh, really?
Sorted out ASAP. Yeah.
Okay.
How's the, sorry for the aside, but how is the sourcing of parts, like supply chain stuff? Is that challenging or pretty readily available for you?
There's a lot of parts on this board, you know, All this stuff up here. And that's just commodity electronic stuff. You just go to a distributor and it'll be in your mailbox, you know, the next day. It comes with data sheets that show you exactly how to use each part. Like some of these parts will have like a 100-page manual that goes along with it. And the part itself is $1. Like,
wild.
It's fantastic. That's how electronics usually work. In fact, you can go on the distributor's website and, you know, look at all the different options and compare and contrast and pick just the right part and know that they're all like well supported and they guarantee, you know, they'll be available for this many years.
That is not how it works with ASICs. That's the part that we really care about. That's what actually does the mining. Bitcoin, these ASICs, I literally, like, I'm not joking. I unsoldered them from this board. That is the only place to get them, which is difficult because they're used and there's all sorts of problems that could happen when you're unsoldering chips. And the other thing is they don't come with a data sheet. I have no idea how those work. Like, we just have to guess. And I've spent years now with a team of very talented people helping out with reverse engineering to figure out how that works. You asked about the supply chain for this. All the rest of the parts are great. The ASIC, which is what the brains of the project here, it's terrible. It is really, really bad. The 256 Foundation is doing a lot of work to fix this. We had some great news last week about this. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, for home mining, for the BitAx project, for these other open source miners to succeed, that supply chain problem of where to get the chips needs to be fixed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll get to that too. Ikana, finish your the projects that the 256 Foundation's working on.
Yeah. So, in addition to the five projects, Scott alluded to an announcement that was made during the fundraising event, which is that Proto Mining, which is the mining division of the Block Company, they gave us 256,000 Intel BZM2 ASICs. And the mandate that the 256 Foundation received with this donation from Proto Mining was to help bootstrap manufacturers who are working on free and open Bitcoin mining hardware. So we are giving those 256,000 ASIC chips away for free if you're a manufacturer in the US. So the most important work we can be doing right now is getting a validated design for Bitcoin mining hardware out there in the open so manufacturers can take that. And then we have places for all of these ASIC chips to go. And so Scott is like working overtime to get that done. And, you know, he can talk more about that if he wants. But over the last year, we knew we wanted to make Bitcoin mining free and open. We weren't sure exactly what that was going to look like, you know, for the foundation. And so there's a few different ways we could have gone about it, but we decided to go with more of like a bounty model than like your traditional foundation model where grant people who just like apply for grants, like engineers, developers, they'll apply for a grant and they'll tell the foundation what they want to work on and how much money they need and what they're going to produce with the support. And so our model's like similar, but it's more of like a bounty program because we've already like defined at a high level the five projects that we want to be laser focused on. And now we've generated a little bit of funding for those projects. We still need a little bit more to fully fund all five of them, but now we're looking for the engineers and the developers to apply to work on those specific projects. So instead of like having them tell us what they're going to be working on, we've kind of defined what the goals are. And now we're looking for the talent to lead those projects.
That's amazing.
And so the Ember One, like we knew for sure we wanted to do like an Ember One. We wanted to take the BitAx to the next level, 100 watt miner. So we've developed it's like a standardized form factor for that hashboard. So that hashboard that Scott was just showing you, there's going to be several different series of those Ember Ones. The first one has the Bitmain chips on it. The next one's going to have the Intel chips. After that, we're doing one with the Auradine chips. And then after that, eventually when Block releases their chips, there'll be a version with the Block chips. But all those different series of Ember One boards are all going to be the same form factor. So if you've like built or purchased an enclosure for your Ember One with Bitmain chips,
And then a year later, there's an Ember One version with the block ASIC that's available and you want to do an upgrade, you can just take your hashboards and slide them out of your enclosure and then slide the new hashboards in there.
Oh, well, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
So you can just keep it sort of advancing as the technology improves. And
yep.
Okay. Yeah.
So the goal with the Ember One project was really to like make it as standardized as possible. And so another part of that, Scott showed you, he had the USB-C connector on the hashboard. So like the Bitmain hashboards get connected to the control board with this proprietary ribbon cable. And it's like you have to use Bitmain's connectors to communicate with that hashboard, or you know, you can come up with some clever hacks, but we're trying to standardize everything. So now we're able to connect to the hashboards with USB-C. So in theory, you could take an Ember One and plug it into your laptop and run it off of your laptop. Like try doing that with a Bitmain hashboard, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. Never mind the noise concerns, but just, I assume the power generation from your laptop's not gonna cover you for a traditional industrial ASIC.
You need 100-watt power supply for each board. But we actually have a very wide input voltage. It can take 12 to 24 volts, whereas the Bitmain boards are very specific, and it's actually different for each revision.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's going to help like people develop new ways to integrate Bitcoin mining into like other appliances or devices. Just widening that input voltage really helps capture a wider, you know, it throws a wider net for any other sort of device that people want to integrate mining into.
Yeah. Do you have a technical or engineering background, or was this your first play in this sort of space?
No, I don't have, I'm not a developer. I'm not an engineer. Everything I know about Bitcoin, and I hadn't even really used command line until I started learning about Bitcoin. So
you just dove in deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, like I went to college and like got a degree, but it wasn't related to like, to what I'm doing here. So.
Yeah. I bet you guys are having a lot of fun with this though.
It's awesome.
I can't imagine. Okay. Hey, let's define something. So we throw around the term self-mining sort of loosely. I'm curious, when you talk about self-mining, are you talking about just something as simple as like, I have a BitAx, I'm self-mining now, or are you referring to creating your own block templates, or pointing to F2 or one of the big pools? Like how do you think about self-mining, and what are you trying to promote here, I guess?
So are you asking about solo mining?
Or I'm sorry. Yeah. Solo mining. I was saying self-mining. Solo mining.
Yeah. It's a hot topic recently.
It is a hot topic. It's kind of interesting because Bitcoin doesn't have a centralized body that's defining terms. Like there's no, you know, marketing department that's coining new terms and releasing them as like, this is what this means. So there actually is a pretty big debate going on about what solo mining even means. The downside is it's creating a lot of confusion, as you know, people getting into Bitcoin are seeing basically different definitions from different people. But
do you think of it?
It's all worth it to keep it decentralized. We don't have anyone like laying down the law. I can tell you my definition of it. I think solo mining means you are not pooling your rewards, meaning you are taking all the risk. That risk being that you will not solve a block and get any payment whatsoever, but then you get all the reward, meaning if you do solve a block, you get all the reward, like the whole, you know, 3.125 Bitcoin right now, you get the full block reward and all the fees. That's what I mean when I say solo mining.
Yeah, okay. I pretty much agree with Scott. Like my definition might be tweaked a little bit. I would say If one miner is receiving the award, then it's solo mining.
Okay. And so having a BitAx and pointing to a pool and taking little fractions of a reward over a long time. That's not really what we're talking about. It's certainly not what you're trying to push and promote as part of your efforts.
Well, to be clear,
sorry.
Go ahead.
To be clear, with the VidAx and these projects, like, we do not prescribe any method. You can do whatever you want. It's a Stratum client, which means it connects to a pool or a server, just like any other miner. So you can use them all. You can do whatever you want. That's very important, is we're not trying to control how anyone mines. That said, I think for the BitAx specifically, because it's such a low hash rate miner, I tend to think that solo mining makes the most sense. You know, people saying you're making, I don't know, 30, 40 sats a day with a BitAx, which is, it's not much. And in a lot of cases, it will take years to get to that minimum withdrawal threshold on your pool. So it's,
yeah,
you're committing yourself to a lifetime of very teeny tiny payments, and there's no chance to get any more. I think it's more intriguing to do solo mining, which some people call lottery mining, is which you'll get absolutely nothing until the very unlikely case that you saw a block, in which case you've won the lottery.
And we don't, I mean, the 256 Foundation, like, you know, we don't care how people mine, like, do like self-hosted solo mining, do like pooled solo mining, like solo CK pool, point it to Ocean, like we you know, and received like a few sats a day. Like, we really don't care. What's important to us is that anyone has access to mining. And that's what we're trying to do. And I think the more open source hardware that's available, the more accessible this technology is going to become to people.
And the more people that we get sort of in control of their own miners, they're just going to pick different things. Everyone's going to have a slightly different idea of how they want to do this. And that is the strength, is that there's no single organization or CEO or something that a regulator or someone seeking to control Bitcoin could go to and be like, do this. They're just spread out across the world, and good luck trying to control them all.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of I think this effort that you guys have underway is, I think, decentralization, from best I can tell, an area that we don't have a lot of decentralization. So what are the economics of this? Like how many BitAxes at its, you know, its current capabilities need to go online to credibly compete with institutional mining? I mean, I imagine it's a lot. And I know that part of it isn't to necessarily, I mean, hopefully BitAx overtakes institutional mining. I think we're maybe a ways off from that, if I understand correctly. But like, is it a drop in the bucket? Or is it like, no, if we are successful, we're going to have a real economic engine behind solo mining?
It's a drop in the bucket. Like, a very, you know, single BitAx is the smallest drop you could possibly imagine. For some reference, BitAxes, we've got several different models, but let's say they're one terahash. An exahash is a million terahash. So if we had a million BitAxes running, that would be one exahash. And I think the current network hash rate, Eco, are we at, we're at 800 something?
Yeah, it's like some 800 exahash.
Right, so we're at like, what's that, like 0.1, a little bit more than 0.1% of the network if we had a million BitAxes.
According to mempool.space, the 14-day moving average is 794 exahash.
Okay.
So BitAx is officially a drop in the bucket. But you asked, you know, do we have a chance? Is anything going to happen? And I would say absolutely. And it's not just, okay, we're going to sell, 80 million BitAx. That's a lot. But we're starting a movement here. And we can see this happening. You know, the Ember One is following projects. There's all sorts of people that are working on bigger, faster, different BitAxes. There's the whole NerdAx project, which has got, you know, 4 chips, 8 chips, 10 chips, all released open source so that anyone can jump in and make what they want to see happen. We're trying to start this movement, and that movement absolutely does have a chance at making a difference. It'll take a while to unseat so the big mega miners and make a difference. But the cool thing is that, you know, we don't need 50% of the network hash rate to make a difference. It's hard to say exactly what we need, but I think we could make a dent with 1%. Now that's not going to happen with BitAxis alone, but it doesn't matter. It can be all sorts of miners, and there's the whole heat reuse market, stranded energy, all of those things stand to benefit from what, you know, the 256 Foundation is working on. And all of those things stand to decentralize the hash rate.
But yeah, that was something. Go on, Ikano. I'll chime in a second.
I was just going to say, I think what's really important is that we get as much hash rate into the hands of individuals as possible, because if there's like if a hash rate is like widely dispersed, then it's much harder to control and like tell everybody what to do with their hash rate. Because, you know, like we were saying, like, we don't care where you mine with a BitAx or with an Ember One, like that, you know, the 256 Foundation's prerogative is just to make the technology accessible to anybody. And so by doing that, you know, it's much more difficult to get everybody to do the exact same thing. They're all going to choose to do something different with their hash rate. And I think that's what's important.
At the Bitcoin way, like our thing is self-custody, like proper 100% self-custody. And I think people underappreciate, you know, some of the counterparty risks of other solutions that aren't 100% self-custody. And it seems like there's probably a similar knowledge gap in mining that we take for granted the fact that a handful of pools, really, from my understanding, one, maybe two manufacturers producing these chips.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that seems to me, and I'm a big fan of Bitcoin Mechanic, and because I, again, don't understand a lot of this stuff, and he's sort of brought to light a lot of these concerns that probably people who have been around a while, like you two, and have really dug into this topic deeply, recognize those risks. Everyone else is just pounding the drum for government adoption of Bitcoin. It's like we've lost the plot,
right?
And yeah. And we're completely missing out on you know, where we need to continue to improve. So I'd be curious. The way I was actually just talking to someone about this recently, and I was sort of speculating that the future of mining, besides I think projects like BitAx, might be, you know, solo mining, where you're heating your home with ASICs, you're heating your swimming pool, right? Stranded energy, Scott, to your point, which I think would add a lot of decentralization. Is that the way you think of maybe the way that, especially as the block subsidy continues to decrease, and perhaps these institutional miners are, you know, strapped for cash and are able to generate a lot fewer, you know, a lot less Bitcoin over time. Is that kind of what you would anticipate the future look like if you were to pull out your crystal ball?
Yeah, the big problem is that you've got this closed proprietary solution that Bitmain has dominated the market with. And people have been trying to take this closed black box that they know nothing about and try to build a business around it. And so in my opinion, the days of just like getting a warehouse that's connected to the grid and filling it full of Bitcoin miners and running a Bitcoin mining operation, like those days are done and behind us. That model is now dead. So there has to be a way to use Bitcoin mining in conjunction with like other revenue streams or supporting different types of business models that make it a viable solution for people moving forward. So, you know, one example is like capturing stranded energy and like reusing wasted products to create energy to mine Bitcoin with. I think those types of business models are really interesting. And the big issue there is that you're trying to now use this machine that was designed to sit on a rack in a warehouse, and you're trying to use it in a very unique way in a different kind of situation to support some other business model that's not a warehouse. And so when it's closed and proprietary and you can't access the firmware, you can't make custom changes, you can't control the variables, you can't control the form factor or how you communicate with it,
it makes it really difficult to innovate and to put Bitcoin mining into these other business models. Mm-hmm. So with the initiatives from the 256 Foundation, we're trying to make things as standardized and as wide open as possible so that we can see this groundswell of innovation come about where people are starting to build these other businesses that are a departure from everything we've seen happen in the last several years with the Bitcoin mining industry.
So would your base case be that in the next, I don't know what your timeline is on this, but 10, 20 years, we see these public miners generally sort of go away? Or do some remain in, you know, like if you're able to operate at really, really low costs, you know, for your electricity and, you know, you're in a really sunny location, you run on solar, or you just have access, you know, hydroelectric or something. Are those the ones who might continue to thrive, but then just can't compete?
So the thing with the public mining companies, like in my opinion, they've got this cheat code where they're like doing these financial tricks to raise capital to fund their operations. And a lot of times, like if you were to take that away, like if they weren't able to just like sell stocks and sell a narrative and get buyers to invest in picking up their stocks to give them money, like their business models would fall apart. Mm. So I think a lot of these like financial tricks are always going to exist and they're never going to go away. So there's probably always going to be like some public company that's mining Bitcoin that is able to sustain itself, but it's not doing that strictly from mining Bitcoin. It's doing that by selling a narrative and doing these financial tricks that are above my understanding to fund their operations.
Scott, do you share a sort of a similar vision or anticipation for mining?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think when you listen to talks from the large miners, they'll talk about things like, you know, they're getting ahead due to their operational excellence and things like that. That seems to me like a code word for various tricks to make something like Bitcoin mining, which is getting less and less profitable on its head, just more profitable.
Is the one other thing that seems like it could be concerning is we move. I mean, again, like with a BitAx, if this thing broke tomorrow, I'd buy a new one, you know, a couple $100, whatever, not a big deal. But for like these, for people who are trying to, you know, use stranded energy and run many like institutional grade ASICs, is like the it seems like there's probably, but I don't know. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, that there would be a gap in maintenance expertise. Like if I was trying to heat my home with, you know, an ASIC, and it broke down on me, I have no capability, no access to parts, you know, to fix that in any reasonable time frame. Is that something that would be of concern to you as the revolution sort of takes hold, that there just aren't, like there isn't the personnel to service these pieces of equipment?
It can't get any worse than it is now.
Okay.
you know, I've talked with several people at large mining companies, and absolutely nobody likes the current situation. There's basically two hardware vendors, and they have a stranglehold on the market, and it's not good. Like getting repair parts, getting changes to the firmware, getting all the things you need to maintain this massive fleet of thousands of machines, it's not good. There's import restrictions and dealing with that. Like these companies, these two companies basically have a monopoly. So why do they need to change anything? It's mega miners don't like it either. You know, if they're a big enough miner, they might get some concessions just because they're so big, but it's not good. The repair documentation that's available is really bad. The warranty programs are classic for just sucking. I think that it will be better, you know, as more people understand how these work, because the documentation is open source and available, repair markets will get so much better. So much better. There's repair markets now that are full of these very talented individuals who have basically dedicated their life to reverse engineering how these products work so they can actually do their job. Like that's no kind of way to be.
Yeah. That's why open source is going to win at the end of the day, because it's going to be well documented. It's going to be standardized. It's not going to be this like closed proprietary mystery that you have to unravel before you can even do your job. It's all going to be right there and widely available and accessible. So, you know, to your example about, you know, stuff breaking down and needing to be fixed and not having the skills yourself to do it, I see that as commercial opportunities for people to build businesses on top of this open source foundation that we're laying.
Yeah. I think there are like maybe certification programs or something for like ASIC repair. Is that true? And if so, is that like something that anyone could kind of figure out? Like you don't have to be an electrical engineer to do, or do you need to be pretty technical?
Well, I think the, you know, having a technical background would help. You know, personally, I'm pretty skeptical of like certification programs myself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, they're out there.
I talked with a guy who went through the official Bitmain program to become a certified warranty repair center. And it's not good. It's really not good. It's tough to make that into a lucrative business. It costs a lot of money to do. And you're not well supported. It's a race to the bottom. And I don't think the common sort of consensus about these warranty programs is that they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Bitmain, their model is to sell ASICs, you know, and if people can fix old ASICs and keep them running longer, then they're not selling new ASICs.
Yeah.
So
Are there other players who could feasibly enter the space and bring competition to the market, particularly to hardware? Or is that like a very, because I know like NVIDIA, it seems like kind of has not a monopoly, but what they're doing is pretty advanced, pretty hard for people to compete with. Is it sort of the same way with these ASIC chips?
Making ASICs is incredibly difficult, like GPUs. It costs tens of millions of dollars to just think about starting, to give you a frame of reference. So mere mortals don't just start making ASICs. That said, there's actually a surprising number of companies sort of in the wings here, like trying to do this, trying to get started. It takes a long time. You need to have very deep pockets. Famously, Block is getting into the game, which is great. Talked to several other companies that are doing it. I think Bitmain and MicroBT and maybe kind of on to a lesser extent are going to see some challenges, some challengers coming forward to like hopefully go after some of these other markets that Bitmain is just ignoring.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, I'm reading the Block Size Wars. That was another eye-opening piece for me. It's like some of the sway that these large institutions at least seem to have, and it felt like we sort of dodged a bullet on the block size war, because it wasn't clear who gets to decide a lot of these things.
Imagine that like Block is in the business of just like producing ASICs. Like I think they're going to do a complete mining system as well, but like once this stuff is all open source, like they can just produce the ASICs. Ardyne can just produce the ASICs. And, you know, Intel, they shut down their ASIC operation, but, you know, we're going to do something fun with the Intel chips. But, you know, there's just, if they can just supply the ASICs, let the manufacturers take the open designs and let the manufacturers come up with the enclosures and how to build, like, put it all together in a complete unit for retail market. Like,
sort of like you were saying, like you've got these ASICs that are made to sit on a shelf effectively. And if there's utility in other applications, like heating your home, it's just, for me, that seems like an easy example. Cause I wish it was something I felt like I could easily do. It seems to me like that's perfect. Or even just like these like home heaters, you know, that, you know, people are starting to make, it seems to me like the chip is really the challenging part. So, Scott, to your point, like everything else you buy is a dollar, they ship it to you in a day or two, and
yeah,
and you've got it. It really is this one piece. Unfortunately, it's by far the most challenging and most critical piece for this. Is that about right?
Yeah, the chip is a total bottleneck.
Yeah.
One of the examples I really like is CPUs for computers. Intel does not make computers. They make CPUs in this case. Yeah. AMD makes CPUs. ARM actually just designs CPUs, and other people make the CPUs. But they sell those with extensive documentation to basically whoever wants them. It ends up being systems builders, systems designers that make a whole wide range of products that use CPUs, everything from like a desktop computer to a laptop to a tablet to a CPU to a giant noisy server that goes, you know, in a server farm somewhere. Those are all different applications that have come about because CPUs are available, and it's not up to the silicon manufacturer to also make the system. I think we can go there with Bitcoin mining for sure. We just need to kind of break up the current paradigm.
Yeah, it's the beauty of free markets. It's specialization, you know, like do what you're best at, and then other people will figure it out. Okay, we're at about 50 minutes here, so I want to be respectful of your time. I want you guys to share So the 256 Foundation had its, I think you call it a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. People, I think, was it 300 something miners were pointed at a pool to raise money. And how long did it take? But yeah, why don't you tell the story? Just tell everyone what happened.
So yeah, we're, you know, in the weeks leading up to this, and really we've been joking about it for like 2 years on Pod 256, that someday we'll get one exahash pointed to us to raise funds for the foundation. But you know, in the weeks leading up to this, we're trying to figure out all the details. We knew we wanted to do a fundraiser. We knew the foundation was laser focused on Bitcoin mining. So we thought it would be appropriate to have Bitcoin miners direct their hash rate to either an account, a mining account that we controlled, or to solo mine to a Bitcoin address that we controlled. And you know, we're narrowing in on this vision, and John Stephanopoulos from FutureBit suggested that we solo mine with one of his Apollo home miners. And we thought about it, and that seemed like a really good fit for like our vision and our ethos. So we decided to hold this fundraiser, and we were gonna live stream the whole event. We're gonna do it for 10 hours. And we had an Apollo FutureBit set up and a URL that anyone in the world could put in their miner configuration file to direct their hash rate to us. And we gave them the Bitcoin address to put in there as the username, so that in the unlikely event we struck a block, the award would go to the 256 Foundation. And so we were probably... You know, we got it going. Hash rates started coming in. You know, there were some technical difficulties that we had to do. But about 7.5 hours or 8.5 hours into the telehash, energy's starting to dwindle. It's getting late. We've been doing this all day. You know, the node has been the Apollo has been resetting, so it's been like touch and go. And all of a sudden, like I'm watching the Apollo dashboard, and I see the best share, which is like an indicator of like how close you are to solving for a block. I see the best share metric on the dashboard reset to zero. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, oh man, this thing has been touch and go all day. Like, what's the problem now? And I ended up just checking mempool.space, and the block that had just been found was, it said FutureBit underneath it. You know, it had been mined by a FutureBit. I'm like, dude, there's no way. And I like click on the block and see that it's our address for the Coinbase reward. And then that's when we realized that we had solved the block. So sorry, I may not have I kind of forgot what your question was exactly, but
I was just tell the story. Here you're doing it.
Yeah, so that's the story of the fundraiser, and we ended
that's
up
amazing
getting 3.146 Bitcoin, and now we can start funding some of our other projects. So I guess I should probably mention. So I talked about the Ember One, and I know we're tight on time, so I'll just go over the other four real quick. But we're also doing an open source control board to talk to the Ember One hash boards. That control board's called the Libra board. Again, all open source, all standardized. Then we're doing a mining firmware called Mugina to run on the control board and, you know, control everything in the complete Ember One mining system. That's going to be a Linux-based firmware, and it's going to have support for multiple drivers so that it can work with any series Ember One hash board, no matter what the chips are. And then we're doing a project, or, you know, I kind of think of these as like applications that you'll be able to just click on and run from your Mugina firmware. And so the first one is called Hydropool. So that's going to be like your Stratum server running on your Ember One mining system. So like, imagine you're also running a Bitcoin full node, then you launch Hydropool, and now you can run your own Stratum server and do self-hosted solo mining right there with your Ember One. And then like another kind of application I have in mind in the last project is called Block Watcher. And that one's going to give miners like a really good insight into everything that's going on the Bitcoin blockchain in a nice, like, user-friendly dashboard. And my grand vision there is that it can actually send commands back to your miner to make changes like based on what you're monitoring on the blockchain. So it's a good thing to be able to like identify activity on chain, but I think it's important to actually be able to do something with that information and to have that in a programmatic, automatic way, talking back to your miners. So yeah, that's kind of the grand vision in the five projects that we really want to develop long-term support for. These aren't just like touch and go projects that we're just going to fund for a year and then walk away from. We want all of these projects to have long-term support and just keep going year after year and just keep getting better and better.
Are you finding a pretty supportive community behind you? I mean, the fact that you found a block, I think is telling, but I suspect that was still very much a long shot.
Yeah.
Are people becoming pretty aware of what you guys are working on and excited about this?
So yeah, Pod 256 was pretty much our only platform for talking about what the foundation has been working on. So our reach was pretty narrow. And I think all the eyes were put on us when we found that block. So having that event live streamed and capturing it on video and finding the block really gave us a lot of attention. And then we were able to share, you know, people started digging like, oh, what are these guys doing? They found a block. They were holding a fundraiser. Like, what was the fundraiser for? And that's where I think people really started to learn about the 256 Foundation and the five projects that we're trying to build. And yeah, the support has been like overwhelming. I won't name names, but there's been multiple prominent developers who have reached out to us over email and other communications to let us know that they're stoked to see what we're working on. And they want to be there to support us, help us screen candidates, help us mentor candidates, mentor the candidates that we select to be the lead developers on these projects. It's been overwhelming. The last couple of weeks have just been crazy. It's like 2 years of like very gradual, slow, just trying to meme this open source mining thing into existence. And then like we hit that block and it's like all the pieces just fell into place.
That's so cool. Yeah. I think it's easy. Like, you spend too much time on Bitcoin Twitter, and it's so frustrating for me. We've got a bi-weekly show we do where we cover the news, and it's like, I'm scrolling through Twitter looking for something to talk about. in its strategic reserve, sovereign wealth fund, like just all the same stuff over and like no yeah. one's talking, not enough people are talking about this. So I'm glad to hear that people are maybe waking up, but I still feel like there's a lot of headway to be made in waking people up to some of these things. I mean, like I think we're probably very philosophically aligned, and I'm still, you know, very new to all of this and trying to figure out how else can I contribute and, you know, what sort of message should I be sending to the people who are listening to these sorts of podcasts. So, Scott, did you want to add anything to that?
I think we're on the right trajectory here. Like awareness of this issue, the mining centralization and what it means for Bitcoin, it's growing. Matt Corallo sounded the alarm, I think, early last year. A lot of people heard that, and he had a very sort of bad outlook for where we're headed if with mining centralization. And I think a lot of stuff that BitAx fans have been doing and the 256 Foundation is like, okay, like here's the solution to this problem, or one of many solutions to this problem. So I think we're headed on the right trajectory. More awareness that this is a problem and what the fixes are. It's been great to see just people interested in this and curious and concerned.
Good, good. Well, I've got one selfish question for you guys. I told you, I think before we hit record that the Bitcoin Way is looking at offering like a solo mining setup service. And so if you guys aren't familiar what we do, I mean, we do a handful of things. Our teams are a lot of cybersecurity experts. Most of what we do though is help people take self-custody, you hold your own keys, don't share it with a third party, zero counterparty risk, that sort of thing. And we tend to have a very sovereign oriented client base. And so I think as more people hear this sort of episode, the things you guys are talking about, the people we tend to work with, we'll be very interested in how can I add hash rate? How can we bring decentralization to the network? I'd just be curious to hear, in fairness, like the BitAx, like pretty easy setup. That said, there's some configuration options. So like day two, mine was overheating and I was like, you know, what's going on? Like, what am I doing wrong here? And so I'm just going to AI, like, hey, what settings do I need to adjust? And so I made the changes. I think we tend to, believe it or not, have a pretty strong baby boomer client base who might be less able to sift through what do I need to adjust. And I think that's where we could bring value, is we hop on a call and we walk you through setup and everything, just make it real simple. What do you believe is the service that people need? Like how could we be helpful? Where should we be directing them? How do they think about, you know, either pointing hash rate or not pointing hash rate to a pool? Just any sort of guidance maybe you could give for us would be interesting.
Yeah, Scott, do you want to start?
I think that there's a lot of parallels between what you're doing with getting people to self-custody their funds. You know, this is the same idea in that you should be sovereign, self-sovereign in these things that you do. And Bitcoin mining is an important part of Bitcoin, and there are ways that maybe aren't immediately obvious how easy they are to do, but there are ways that you can be a self-sovereign miner. It involves having your own miner, preferably an open source one, but then also mining to your own node. So setting up a node, how do you do that? What hardware do you get? How do you configure it? And then there's some additional software that you have to install, Hydropool, hopefully in the future, that you have to install, and then you can point your miner at that. And that's really powerful because you're top to bottom self-sovereign mining there. Like no one can get in the way and stop you. And I think the more people we have doing that, the better for Bitcoin, the movement in general. So I think, you know, if there's any way that the people you're interacting with are interested, help them get a node set up, help them get it configured to point their BitAx to. I think every single person that does that benefits us all. So
terrific.
Yeah, I'll add that you know, a lot of people get hooked on these narratives and they're on a mission, you know, they want to do something, but they kind of get sideswiped by these narratives like, oh, it's too complicated to like run your own mining infrastructure, you'll never compete with the large industrial miners,
don't waste your time, don't waste your money. You'd be better off just buying Bitcoin at an exchange. Like, but you know, I would just encourage people to just cast all those bullshit narratives aside and just know that like you can get involved and you can do it. And once you get your hands on it, it's really not that complicated. So I would just encourage anybody to just start as small as possible. And I, that's why I love the BitAx platform, because you, if anyone's read my guide from 2021 about how to integrate an industrial sized miner into your living space, you'll see right away that like the heat and the noise are two very, very tough problems to solve. And the BitAx doesn't have any noise and it doesn't produce any heat. So like you really don't have to worry about anything. It, like the two biggest issues in trying to mine at home are solved right out the gate with the BitAx. So for, you know, less than $200, you can have a BitAx shipped to you. Go to plebsource.com, for example, order before 1 p.m. Central Time. It'll be on your doorstep. It'll be shipped that day. So you order one of those, you get it set up, and it's like you instantly start learning about mining. So, you know, don't worry about like self-hosted solo mining. Don't worry about which pool is better, or, you know, this or that or the other thing. Like, just get a BitAx and just start and just pick a pool, start pointing it there and just see the hash rate, look at it on your web browser and just start learning about it. And then slowly but surely, you're going to like start figuring out things and you're going to start developing preferences and you're going to, you know, maybe you'll want to go a little bit deeper and want to self-host your own little Stratum server and do some like solo mining, or maybe you're going to be fine just running it to a pool. Like, you know, it doesn't matter, but the key step is just to like, don't let the naysayers get to you. Start simple, start small. And the most important thing you can do is just get started somehow.
Yeah. And it really does like invite these questions that are so important to the Bitcoin movement. I know from setting up BitAxes for my parents, in-laws, you know, they're like, okay, cool, this is running. Well, wait, what's it doing? Like, do I get any money? When do I get money? Like, how does this help? What's going on here? And those are the sorts of questions that are amazing to have people ask. And then, you know, we can provide more and more resources to better answer those.
Yeah, I love that, because, you know, like we're huge proponents of run your own node, like be your own bank, do it the right way, take those final steps. And as I said, as a topic like mining that hasn't been at the forefront of my mind, it was never apparent like how, like my friend and I, before we really understood what the hell was going on, we bought a miner and we have it hosted somewhere down in Texas. And so like, it's needlessly expensive. It's like, that is a very low cost or low efficiency way of accumulating Bitcoin. But I think my point here is, everyone should be running a node. We need a decentralized network, and everyone should be running a BitAx. Everyone should have some solo mining operation going on, whether it's a single one terahash device or whether they want to step up their game and do something crazy, or they've got access to cheap energy or whatever. But like a BitAx in every home, I think would be like a good motto for the mission you guys are on. I think that'd be an amazing future.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And it's addicting. Careful. You know, you'll start being obsessively interested in Bitcoin mining in no time.
I believe it. All right. Well, I got one more question for you, Connor. You know what I'm going to ask. You got to think of a different answer this time around, though. So, Scott, I always ask at the end of each episode, what is an unpopular opinion that you hold? And you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with this opinion. You can think on it. Akana, you probably have some more that you're ready for, though.
Man, I just
you remember
started
what you said last time?
Yeah. I think last time I said that COVID-19 was a plot to depopulize the world. That was my
fact.
Controversial take, which I don't think is that controversial.
It's becoming less controversial, that's for sure.
Yeah. Man, I'm trying. I had just remembered that you were going to ask that like maybe like 10 minutes ago. And I've been trying to think of something.
trying to think of something that'll piss off Bitcoiners.
Well, if it helps you, I had Saifedean on the show a while back, and his answer was he thinks movies are a total waste of time. He hates watching movies. He doesn't get it. So it doesn't have to be anything totally, you know, crazy, but just anything that you think would ruffle some feathers.
Man, yeah, I gotta.
I put you on the spot.
Yeah, I gotta think about it. I think. I mean, I say this a lot, and it's probably not that controversial, but like KYC services are just such dog shit. And if you're using KYC services to acquire your Bitcoin, you're just accumulating a shitcoin. It's not really Bitcoining. So like, rip the Band-Aid off, stop using Coinbase, stop using these like centralized KYC services. You're just neutering the things that Bitcoin can actually do, the permissionless and censorship resistant part of it. You're still liable to get your account shut down and have your Bitcoin held hostage while you try to submit more KYC documents and like go through more invasive interrogations from these companies. And then they know what Bitcoin you have. Even once you get it out from under their control, they know what Bitcoin you have. And that is like irrevocably linked to your identity. So if that Bitcoin goes anywhere that somebody takes issue with, you're still on the hook for it. So stop using KYC services. It's a shitcoin.
Do you have a favorite peer-to-peer place where you'd buy?
Dude, I think the best thing you can do is like cash in hand, like face-to-face, like at meetups. Find someone. Yeah, like start going to local meetups and you know, start talking to people. I think that's really the best thing you can do. Online, I think BISC is great. I think what RoboSats is doing is great. Those are good options. And you know, also like mining Bitcoin. If you can, like, imagine you're spending $10 a day on electricity to run a miner at home. Essentially, what you're doing is paying your electricity company $10. And receiving Bitcoin on the back end of that. So yeah. as long as you're getting $10 worth of Bitcoin for the $10 you're spending on electricity, then you're doing okay. So, you know, you want to be careful with that because there's a lot of considerations and, you know, maybe you're paying a little bit of a premium depending on the exchange rate some days, but some other days you may actually be getting your Bitcoin at a discount.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So like, and Bitcoin's going to appreciate in value. So even if you're at a loss today, tomorrow you might not be.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think back to a point I made earlier, I think your unpopular opinion is unfortunately becoming, it is actually becoming unpopular. I think in the days of like the cypherpunks, they would, everything you said, they completely agree. I just literally saw a video. I won't name names or share the company that promoted this, but they were explaining why KYC is so important. It protects you and helps with the anti-money laundering. I mean, it's like literally everything that Bitcoiners have been saying for a decade, why KYC sucks. They're promoting it as like this positive, you know, thing that we do to take care of you.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Again, yeah, losing the plot.
Not only does it neuter the things that Bitcoin was actually designed to do, but then you've given all your info, you've put all of your information into this honeypot that's eventually just going to get hacked. And as the price of Bitcoin goes up as Bitcoin goes up in value, the information related to people who hold Bitcoin is going to go up in value too. So violent criminals are going to go through greater and greater lengths to get a hold of that information so that they can target individuals and then just go hit them over the head with a hammer and steal their keys. And so like, not only is that honeypot going to get hacked and eventually dumped on the dark web for violent criminals to take, but that honeypot is also there for the government to enforce any sort of like unrealized capital gains tax or, 6102 style executive order. Like, dude, it's just a total crapshoot when you're using KYC services. So like,
yeah,
just be a big boy, rip the Band-Aid off and never look back.
Okay. Scott, you come up with something?
Yeah. I think this US Strategic Bitcoin Reserve idea is bullshit. We don't need this.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. I guess the people that I talk to, this is not a hot take, but a lot of what I see, like you said on Twitter, is that, you know, fighting for this, trying to encourage the government to do this. I don't know why we're doing that. Obviously, they can do whatever they want. Anyone can buy Bitcoin, but we don't stand to benefit anything from having the government have a huge hoard of Bitcoin. Like maybe Trump, maybe the current administration will be responsible with it, but we're going to have a new administration in 4 years and then a next one and the next one. And they, yeah.
I'm with you there. And like, I think that too, sometimes when people get psyched about Nayib Bukele in El Salvador, I'm like, you realize he's going to die someday, even if he remained president through the remainder of his life. Like, eventually he's not the guy anymore. And like, we just have like amnesia about the way politics works in the United States. It's wild.
Someone's going to inherit that. And we don't know who
it's not going to be pretty.
Kind of party yeah. risk.
Yeah, yeah, we don't have no good track record. That's for sure.
The short-sighted reality is that, you know, these people just want to pump their bags, and they think, oh, if the government is holding it, then, you know, we're one step closer to mass adoption, and then I'm going to be ridiculously rich. And, you know, these people are probably buying all their Bitcoin on exchanges, and like, either the exchange is going to get hacked and their info is going to get dumped, and they're going to get robbed at home, or the government is just going to like seize their Bitcoin anyways. Like, they're just fooling themselves. So it's just this, it goes into that whole like mass adoption narrative. And yeah, it's like, what happened to the separation of money and state? Like, I thought that's what this was all about.
Yeah. We've got a client who's been on the podcast now a couple times. He's a former DOD guy, lives in Japan now. And he thinks that the reserve is really going to be the implementation of a CBDC. So, hey, use our token. It's backed by Bitcoin, surveillance state nightmare, like, you know, everything. And actually, I haven't looked into it in detail, but Senator Lummis announced like the Genius Act. I don't know if you guys saw this. Mm-hmm. It's just like in the last day or two. And it looks eerily similar to some of the prophecies he's made with respect to like regulating stable coins. And it's like, oh, that could be the CBDC, you know? It's
right.
Yeah, man, we need to get people back on track. I'm tired of the number go up hopium. I want the number to go up too, but it's going to do that. It did that for, you know, for 15 years without any government support. So,
right. Exactly.
Yeah. All righty. Well, hey, you guys are doing some amazing work. Thank you guys so much for taking time with me today. Enjoyed this conversation. I really hope a lot of people see this. Why don't you give a quick handoff? Tell people where they can find you, where they can get their mining hardware, and anything else you want them to know.
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, bitx.org is a great place to learn about the BitX project. I have my contact information on there, links to the source, links to resources to find out more about the project. That's a great place. I got a link to my Twitter where I, you know, just posting crazy stuff every day.
Good stuff.
And I'm Econo Alchemist on Twitter. And then the website you'd want to visit to learn more about what we're working on is 256foundation.org. And while you're at it, visit freesamurai.com too.
Do that.
Definitely. Perfect. Everyone wake up, pay attention, check out what these guys are doing. Good stuff, guys. Great chatting.
Thanks
for having us.
And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with these guys. I know I sure did. Learned a lot. This, as I said many times, is still an area that is new to me, but very excited to start diving deeper into it, running my own BitX, and looking at other options too. So go check out BitX. Go check out the 256 Foundation. Of course, if you enjoyed this show, if you enjoy the channel in general, do me a favor, subscribe to the channel, like this video, share a comment. We'd really appreciate any support to feed the algorithm, of course. You can follow the Bitcoin Way on X. It's at the Bitcoin Way _. You can follow me there as well, at the other M Jordan. And of course, if you need help with proper 100% Bitcoin self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We also help with online privacy, privacy phones, and Plan B residencies. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.